Today we're going to do the same thing I did last time, which is I'm going to start with a 15-minute or so minute, and then I have about 30 or so minutes of prepared stuff for you, which I hope you will find useful and helpful. And then I'm open to your questions. And at any time, if you have questions, please put them in the chat window here or do the little hand-raisy thing, and that way I can attend to it. And the purpose of these Sanity Saver get-togethers is to serve you and to find out how I can best be of service. So the more you are willing to share what's going on in your life, the particular challenges you are experiencing, and what could potentially be helpful, the better I can be of service. And just imagine you have a magic wand and you can wave it and you can erase some particular challenge you're having right now. So if you're willing to share that with me, then I can potentially help you with that. And what you have to realize is that you are not alone. Whatever challenge it is that you are experiencing right now, chances are very good that there's a bunch of other people experiencing the same challenge. So you're actually being generous when you decide to share whatever trials that you're going through. So with that, why don't we start with a little meditation? We're going to do the same meditation we did last time. Tomorrow I'm going to do a more elaborate meditation. Tomorrow is going to be the Wheel of Consciousness meditation, which is super powerful. However, I want you to get used to this Hum Sa meditation as well, which is a very useful thing. I've been doing this for about 15 years now, and the Hum Sa meditation derives from many traditions. It's been around for either hundreds of years or thousands of years, and its particular power is that you're focusing on three different things while you do it. The first is the sensation of breath as it's coming through your nostrils. The second is to put your attention, your eye's attention, on the space in between your eyebrow. So you're looking up with your eyes closed. And that changes the way your brain feels. It kind of puts your electroencephalogram pattern into alpha, if that means anything to you. It just means that you're in a much more relaxed yet alert state. And finally, what you're doing is you're silently saying these two syllables to yourself, hum on the inhale and sa on the exhale. And when you do those three things, something very interesting happens. You stop having any thoughts. And that's a super powerful thing, because guess what? The thing that gets us in trouble is thoughts. One of the first things that the Tao Te Ching says is stop thinking and solve all your problems. At the same time, your brain is designed to think. So the goal isn't to obliterate all thoughts. It's more along the lines of, hey, can we practice dismissing thoughts when we want to? Because that's what gets us in trouble. So holding on to a thought and keep on traveling with it as it drags us along. There's an old Buddhist saying, something along the lines of, let go or be dragged. So we're learning how to let go. And if I were to summarize all of Buddhism in two words, that would be it: let go. So I think that's a good enough introduction to get everybody on board here. I think we have the people who want to be here. Why don't we begin? So take a deep breath and close your eyes. And as you close your eyes, I invite you to imagine that you are paying attention to the sound and feeling of breath coming through your nostrils. Notice the sensation of air as it passes through your nose and into your lungs. And as you do that, with every inhale, silently say, hum. And with every exhale, silently say, saw. Hum on the inhale, saw on the exhale. And while you do that, allow your eyes to flip up and look at the back of your forehead, specifically at the space in between your eyebrows. In some traditions, they call that the third eye center, or Ajni. So go ahead and look up at that third eye center while you pay attention to the sensation of breath as you breathe in and say, hum, silently on the inside. Hmm. Exhale, sa, silently on the inside. And continue doing that. For the next 13 and a half minutes. Taking nice, deep, comfortable breaths. Silently saying hum as you breathe in while paying attention to the sensation of air passing through your nose. And sa as you exhale, as you pay attention to the sensation of air leaving your lungs and your nostrils. Breathing naturally. While looking up at your forehead. And while you're doing this, it is perfectly natural to continue to have thoughts. So go ahead and practice letting those thoughts go. All you have to do is return to center and do the three practices. Look up, pay attention to the breath, and say the mantras hum as you inhale, sa as you exhale. When you return to the center, you will successfully release all thoughts. And anytime you find yourself chasing down a thought, seeing where it goes, just remind yourself to come back to center. Come back to center and gently let the thought go. Pay attention to the breath. Pay attention to the hum as you inhale. Saw as you exhale. And focus your eyes on the space between your eyebrows. And notice that when you focus on the breath, on the inner sounds, and on the third eye center, a certain silence develops where there may have been chatter. A certain quality of expansiveness. As you experience the vastness of your consciousness, total quiet that you can experience. When you remember to come back to center, pay attention to the breath. Do the inner mantra and look up. And for the last few minutes of this meditation session, I'd like to lead you in a little loving kindness meditation. In Sanskrit, this is called metta, and it is about giving and receiving love and compassion. And so with your eyes closed, in this state of quiet equanimity and expansiveness, I invite you to imagine somebody in your life for whom you have unconditional love. This could be a child, family member, could be a friend, could be a religious figure, whoever it is. Just imagine that person for whom it's very easy for you to just feel love without any barriers whatsoever. And go ahead and imagine that there's a hologram of this person in front of you right now. And send to that person loving kindness. Send them your love. And silently say, may you be happy. May you be free. May you be at ease. May you be healthy. And really feel that goodwill emanating from you as if it's a giant beam of light moving from your heart to their heart. And in return, imagine them reciprocating and returning that love and saying to you, may you be happy. May you be at ease. May you be at peace. May you be healthy. And next, I invite you to select someone else who's maybe a little more difficult to love. This could be a different family member, could be a coworker or a boss, someone for whom you have positive regard, but just a little more challenging to have that unconditional love. So go ahead and, with your eyes closed, once again, imagine that hologram of that person and send to them love and say, may you be happy. May you be at peace. May you be healthy. May you be at ease. And really feel it as you do that. And imagine that beam of light, of unconditional love, connecting you with that person. Your heart's connected as they respond to you and say, may you be happy. May you be at peace. May you be at ease. May you be healthy. And now moving to somebody who's perhaps neutral in your life, maybe some passerby on the street or somebody who helps you with groceries at the store. And once again, take that same feeling that now you've practiced and gotten better at, that feeling of unconditional love, and send it on over. Beam it to them and say, may you be happy. May you be at ease. May you be healthy. May you be joyous. And imagine them sending that beam right back to you. May you be happy. May you be at ease. May you be healthy. May you be safe. And finally, I want you to pick somebody who is actually quite difficult to love, somebody for whom maybe you even have strong antagonistic feelings. I used to do this with Dick Cheney, and now I do it with the Prez, because these are the people who need the compassion the most. And as you practice, you get stronger. As you send to this particular difficult person in your life, may you be happy. May you be safe. May you be at ease. May you be healthy. And then imagine that person sending it right back to you. May you be happy. May you be safe. May you be at ease. May you be healthy. And finally, we go for the toughest person of all. Imagine a hologram of you standing there. And go ahead and take that same unconditional love you had for that very first person for whom it was super easy and send it to you and connect and say, may you be happy. May you be healthy. May you be at ease. May you be safe. Take a deep breath, seal it all with a little bow. About gratitude for the ability to do this and to share loving kindness with the world and to be able to receive it in turn. All right. How's that feel? All right. Let's see what we got here. How y'all doing here?
It was great. Thank you so much. It was wonderful.
Okay, good. So let's talk about this whole loving kindness meditation theory. Thank you for the feedback. So here's the deal. Right now, we are in crisis. There's stuff happening all over the world, and people are getting sick. People are dying. People are losing jobs. People are economically insecure feeling. People are emotionally insecure feeling. There's all kinds of stuff happening out there, right? And yet, somehow, over the past 18 minutes or so, we were able to manufacture an oasis of calm inside our heads and hearts. And it wasn't all that difficult. All we did was we slowed down, and we did this practice of focusing on three different things. And suddenly, you have this expansiveness. You have this space. You have the ability to think and feel independently of circumstance. And I'd like to think that this is the number one skill of adulthood, to be able to regulate your own feelings and thoughts. And the universe was kind enough to manufacture the most complicated, amazing, sophisticated machine in the entire cosmos and drop it into our cranium, but it did not give us an instruction manual. So think of this as a bit of an instruction manual for how you can direct your own mind and your own feelings and your own thoughts. And notice that thoughts can come and thoughts can go. And the metaphor I like to use, which I repeat on these, is that imagine that your consciousness is like a big old TV screen or even the computer screen that you're using right now. And you can project on that, say, a zombie movie or a comedy or a Taylor Swift video. And the TV itself, the screen itself, doesn't change. You're just projecting some kind of program on there. When you turn it off, that's gone, or you can put something else on there. So that's the way your consciousness is. So the thoughts are like the TV shows. They're like the music videos, and these can get projected on there, but they're not you. You are the consciousness. You are that vastness that you felt when you were doing the Hum Sa meditation. And the more you do this, the more you practice this, the more you're able to identify with that aspect of who you are, with that vastness, with that unsullied consciousness that can never be sullied, right? I mean, if you throw mud at the air, does the air get dirty? No, air remains clean. So your consciousness is like that. And you can have that luminosity anytime you want. And then when you add to that the metta meditation, the metta meditation is really powerful because that really is the end point of meditation practice. That's the whole point of the exercise, which is you want to be able to build your mind up and be able to direct it so you can be an instrument of usefulness to the world. And compassion helps you get there. So compassion meditation, and when you're being compassionate to somebody who's a little difficult or somebody who's neutral or somebody who's really difficult, you're doing something to really make the world a better place. Because what's happening is instead of being caught up in anger and all that energy that sucks away from you, you're coming from a place of empowerment and the ability to give your own gift on your terms, as opposed to having to react to the world in a way that's really angry or just kind of caught up and tight, as opposed to this expansiveness. So that is why we meditate. And please, and consider these sessions as a personal training session for your mind. So I'm your trainer, and you come here, and we have a personal training session. And I say, okay, here, we're doing the biceps curls for your mind. We're doing the presses, we're doing the lunges, and I show you proper technique. And then it's on you to go and keep on doing this. and to become fit. So I can't be there when you're running around the block to become fit, but I can be your cheerleader. So make sure you continue these practices and basically become a connoisseur of your own mind's functioning and become curious about your thoughts. I mean, that's one thing that you get to learn to do when you meditate is you get to slow down your thoughts and see them going. It's like, oh, wow, that's an interesting thought. What was that all about? And you let it go. You become curious about them instead of being caught up in them. And that puts you in a meta position. So this is metacognition. You're thinking about your thoughts instead of being your thoughts, which is kind of the point of this whole exercise. Okay, very good. So if you have questions, please put them in there. And I'm going to start with the lecture part. Well, I guess I've been lecturing the whole time, but some specific stuff I want to tell you about. So recently, I had the pleasure of reading this fantastic book that just came out. It came out April 7th, so it's been 3 days. And this is the book. Can you see the book? Let me see here. You can probably see it. Yes, you can see it. So it's called Together by Vivek Murthy. Dr. Vivek Murthy was the 19th Surgeon General of the United States of America. Great guy, amazing guy. So I saw him in San Francisco at the last conference that I was allowed to go to, the Wisdom 2.0 conference, and he spoke there, and he's like Dr. Buddha, basically. Just sits there and in this incredibly calm and caring demeanor. He just tells you, hey, America, we've got a problem. We've got a loneliness epidemic. And this epidemic was happening way before this whole coronavirus thing hit the fan. And it's true. People used to have like 4 or 5 confidants that they could speak to. And now that number on average is below 1. People don't even have a single person that they can talk to and really open up their hearts to. And also just, you know, civic gatherings gone down. Bowling Alone was the book that started all this like 20-some years ago. And this whole coronavirus pandemic is probably not helping because now we can't get out. And it's just you and, I don't know, your demons, I guess, if you have them. Might as well make friends with them and party. So what's the alternative? So Dr. Murthy is a great guy. So he was kind enough to tell his publishers, yo, stop the presses. I want to add something here. So the book was published April 7. So in March, he added a little addendum at the beginning of his book. I guess that's what he called an addendum because he added it. And it's about the 4 things we can do right now to make things better in terms of preventing loneliness and increasing a sense of connection. So here they are. Number 1, spend time each day with those you love, at least 15 minutes. And consider this just like a workout. Consider this like any number of the bullshit appointments you've actually made in your life and been present at all the useless meetings you've gone to. So make this a meeting as well. Make this something you put on your calendar and give it the time and priority that it deserves. So right now I encourage you to write down the names of 3 people that you would like to contact in the next 3 days and have a 15-minute conversation with. So go ahead, I'm here, I'll wait. And who would that person be? And make sure you set aside the time to make that phone call and connect with them and speak to that person in real time. And this is particularly important in this day and age because one thing I've noticed over the past few years is that people have stopped using their phones. So people text one another and that has superseded the phone as a medium of communication. And so what happens is that people don't pick up their phones. So I have these friends that I've known for 10, 20 years and I call them, I don't get a call back. And dude, if I'm calling you now, it's because I'm either worried that you're dying or I'm dying. So you should probably pick up and they still don't pick up. So you can be the person who starts to buck this trend because it's really important that we connect and actually have tabs on each other right now. So the other thing you can do is when people call you, make sure you pick up. And if somebody calls you and you're having a text conversation, if it's more than 3 or 4 texts, just pick up the phone and start talking. It'll be a much richer conversation, I assure you. So that's 1. Spend time each day with those you love, at least 15 minutes. 2, he says, focus on each other and give one another undivided attention. So the idea is multitasking is so 2019. We are here to give one another our attention and to be fully present. So especially if you're on some electronic medium like Zoom, make sure you're, boom, looking at the camera, or just you're giving your attention to that person. You're hanging on every word. You're actually listening to what that person is saying, because this is the substance of our lives. And you don't want to be on your, what do you want your epitaph to read? He multitasked? Great. Amazing. Right? But when you're talking to your buddies, you want to not be multitasking. You want to be monotasking, focusing on the person directly in front of you. Okay, good. Number three, embrace solitude. Connecting with yourself is a prerequisite for connecting with others. There is a difference between solitude and loneliness. And Dr. Murthy goes through this in detail in his book. By the way, the book is fantastic. Everybody should read it, especially since you've got time on your hands, people. So Dr. Murthy says, look, loneliness is that feeling of deficiency. And you've got, he's got these three different spheres. He's got the, you know, the close relationships, the friendships, and the community. You can have one of those three or two of those three and still feel like you're lonely because you're missing one of the three. Okay. We need all three of them. We need like the close romantic connection. We need the close friendship connection. And then we need the feeling of community, being with your people, your tribe connection. Okay. If any one of those is deficient, you're going to feel lonely. But solitude is great. Solitude is voluntary. Solitude is, yeah, I'm in this and I want to be in it. Solitude is the time for you to get in touch with you. And this, if you haven't guessed already, is an extraordinary time to experience some solitude. Now, if you're not ready for it, it's going to hurt. A couple of years ago, I went to Finland and did a little writing retreat up in the woods there for 3 weeks. No cafes, nothing, no people. And I gotta tell you, it was hard because it was just me. But here, even though you may be living alone, it's not just you. You may have a roommate, you have friends around you. So you can actually be solitary voluntarily. So go ahead and architect that into your life, design it into your life, whether it's a 30-minute meditation you do, whether it's a walk you go on by yourself. When you decide that this is the thing you wanna do, then you know, it doesn't feel like loneliness anymore, right? You've done it deliberately. And guess what? You may never have another opportunity to be in so much solitude and have so much space for solitude. We lead such busy lives. We're constantly running. Some people work weekends and then they come and they have to take care of their family. So when you get to be alone, so now may be a really good time to take advantage of this opportunity. Like some wise person said, never let a good crisis go to waste. And number four that Dr. Murthy says is help and be helped. Give and receive service to strengthen our social bonds. And this is so important because how else do you know you have friends if you're not helping one another out? So this is how I'm doing it. I'm keeping 6 feet away from all you guys just to maintain the physical distancing. But at the same time, I want to be close to you and I want to help you thrive and be happy. So this is how I do my service. How are you doing your service? And there are amazing opportunities for this. You can go on nextdoor.com and find out who your neighbors are and find out who needs help getting groceries maybe and do that. Maybe you can get involved with making masks. 10 years from now, people are going to ask, how did you serve during the COVID-19 crisis? Maybe nobody asked, but you're going to ask yourself, how did you serve during the COVID-19 crisis? So now is a really good time to make sure you're at peace with yourself at that time and for the rest of your life. And moreover, you can be selfishly altruistic. In fact, I believe that there's no such thing as altruism because altruism feels good. Serving other people makes me feel good. So when you serve other people, you feel great, and then you can radiate that positive energy to all the people in your network. So, you know, that's an incredibly useful thing to do. And I also say that making yourself happy is an incredibly altruistic thing to do because when you're happy, you are this node in the middle of these networks that are connected. I mean, everybody, we are all connected to each other. And so when you change your behavior, when you become an epicenter of light and positive energy and being upbeat and being able to lift other people up, guess what? That reverberates throughout your network. And scientists have shown this. So the work of Nick Christakis and Jamie Fowler shows definitively that your behavior propagates through your network and it has first, second, third order effects. So when I hear my friend's friend is sick, I start to feel a little sad, right? And the same way, when you're upbeat, when you're on your social networks and you're being supportive of other people, that also reverberates throughout the network. Okay. Fantastic. Good. So we have comments here. Such a gift to learn to love your own company. Absolutely. Great observation there, Anna, because look, you're stuck with you for the rest of your life. And I'm considering reconfiguring the Tao of Dating book and trainings. And the first part of it is going to just be a big part of it about who are you and what do you stand for and what are your values? Because the prerequisite to be able to relate to somebody else is to be able to relate to yourself. So if you can't stand being alone, guess what? You're definitely not going to be able to stand being with a partner, especially when that partner is like living with you, is in your room and snores in your bed. I mean, what is this shit, right? So prerequisite, get comfy with being you. So solitude is great. And you know what? Stuff's going to come up. There was stuff before all this happened. You had issues. Guess what? Those issues are now just going to be amplified. Coronavirus is like social x-ray. It's like, it zaps through your body. It's like, ha, we see the problem now. So take note of them and make friends with your demons. Dance with them, party with them, because these demons are going to be around for a very long time. And generally speaking, the thing that does not work is pushing the demons down and trying to get rid of them, but acknowledging that, hey, here's a little demon. What are you all about? The demon tends to calm down and eventually it just goes away of its own accord. So this is a great time to make friends with whatever uncomfortable emotions you are having. And as Pema Chodron likes to say, especially in her book, When Things Fall Apart, she says, learn to lean into the sharp points of life. As you have these difficult emotions like grief, like loneliness, like pain, like genuine pain, like uncertainty, the more you try to run away from them, the more the thing will try to pursue, because that is nature's signal for chase after that. Things running away, I'm going to run after it, right? So stay put. Lean into the pain, lean into the uncomfortable emotion, and see what it's trying to tell you. And no emotion lasts forever. Everything is temporary, including moods and emotions. So when you do lean into it, take it as a signal that you're alive. If you're feeling something, that means you're alive, which means you're doing better, a lot better than 100,000 people who've already perished from this pandemic. And that's another thing, gratitude. Gratitude is huge. So last time we did a whole gratitude meditation, and that is always a good idea. So if you're on this call, if you have access to broadband, if you have food in your fridge, if you're in a place that has great sanitation, has ICUs, that has ventilators in case things go wrong, if you have savings in the bank, guess what? You're in an amazing spot. And gratitude, 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 gratitude. It just drives all the bad things away as you focus on what there is as opposed to what there is not. All right, good. So if you have questions, put them over here. Great comments here. The best way to help those in darkness is to be the light. Love it. And it's also practice for you. When you learn how to be the light, guess what? You lift other people up, you feel good, and it's a self-perpetuating cycle. It just makes things even better. So the next technique I'd like to teach you about is called Spanda. So Spanda, this is from Kashmiri Tantra, a branch of mystical Buddhism. And I learned it from the book of this gentleman who basically went chasing down his Tantrika in the wilds of Kashmir, didn't know where she was, but he'd heard about her. And he's a crazy 20-something-year-old French dude. So he went, and now he's a 60-something-year-old guy. His name is Daniel Audier, and he teaches some really cool stuff. So this is from his book, I believe it's called Desire. And Spanda, what Kashmiri Tantra talks about is the universe being always animated. Everything is alive and everything is vibrating. And there's an analog for that in modern physics. Everything is vibrating. All forms of energy is a form of vibration. So when you feel something that's warm, when you feel heat, that is molecules vibrating. When you have light that is electromagnetic radiation. That's vibration of photons. When you have sound, that's the vibration of sound, that air molecules hitting your eardrum, your, and then, you know, your stapes, malleus, incus, cochlea, brain, boom, you've heard stuff. So when you are experiencing energy, you're experiencing the spanda of the universe. And you are part of it too. You are electric. Right now as I'm speaking, it's because I have electrical impulses going from my brain through various axons and neurons and coming out into my vocal cords, into my mouth, muscles. It's all spanda all the time. If you're sitting there, you have electromagnetic radiation right now in your heart. It's like sending this wave of electrical impulse, and then you've got this the cyclical thing going on. It's kind of amazing and miraculous. So what we're going to do is we're going to plug into that universal energy in a moment and learn how to do it pretty much on command. So take a deep breath and close your eyes. And imagine you have before you the power sockets of the wall of the universe. So you got a wall here and you got a power socket. This is the universe's wall. And you got these power sockets and they're in the exact shape of your hands. Okay, so what's going to happen is you're going to put your hands in these power sockets. And when you do that, you're going to feel the electricity, the spanda, the vibratory energy of the entire universe moving through your body. And it was already there. You're just kind of making yourself aware of it and its presence in you. So count three, one, two, three. As you put your hands in the socket, and imagine that that vibration is now moving through you. The heat of your fingertips, that's vibration. Electricity conducting nerve impulses to your muscles, holding your hands up, that's vibration. The sound you're hearing right now, that's vibration. Everything. And just imagine yourself fully engulfed in that. If it helps to make a little hum sound, go ahead and do that. That's more vibration. Feel the hum of the universe moving through you. And do that for a count of 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Imagine going all the way down to the tip of your toes and all the way to the top of your head. Whew! And then pull your hands out. Take a deep breath and be fully present here. I don't know how you guys are feeling, but I'm feeling pretty jazzed up right now. And that took how long? 15, 20 seconds? So Daniel Odier in his book says, this is the whole of meditation. This is it. This is all of tantric meditation. So if you do just that, that will transform your life. And the idea is to just do it all day long. It takes 15 seconds. You just kind of close your eyes, go spanda, feel the universe. And what you're really doing here is that you're realizing that there is this sheet of reality. There's this thing of basically the quantum soup, and you're part of it. I mean, at the quantum level, there is very little difference between the surface of your skin and the air immediately outside of it. They're pretty much indistinguishable. It's all matter, right? And you are in this soup. So what you're doing is at that moment, boom, you're recognizing your oneness with the universe, the fact that you are of a piece with everything else in the cosmos, and everything in the cosmos is alive. And all things are sentient beings according to this mystical mode of thought, which is kind of fun and empowering. So you do this if you want to set an alarm to do this once an hour or maybe once during every meal. It will change your life because suddenly, boom, you're jazzing up your energy. You are feeling like you are one with the universe, and that tends to make things a lot easier. Okay, fantastic. So questions here. If you have questions, now is an excellent time to ask them. If you do not, I will keep on forging ahead. Let's see. All right, so you're all new here today compared to yesterday. So I'm going to do the same mood lifter exercise from yesterday. So that was fun and it's super effective. I also want to emphasize the use of music. So music is very key. So music can immediately lift your mood. And it works through this process. You can call it conditioning or anchoring, depending on how you learned it. But the idea is that Usually when you hear a fun song, it's a time when you're having fun. So you're at a party with friends, you're dancing. And so your body hears that song. It's like, ooh, I must be having fun. Also, the songs, the music inherently has the ability to lift you up. So I compiled a list, a playlist on Spotify, which I'm happy to share with you. It is called the Mood Lifter by Dr. Ali B. And I'll put a link here for you when I find it. And yeah, you just listen to these songs and suddenly you feel better. So what are the first few songs on there? So there's Happy by Pharrell Williams. There is Can't Stop the Feeling by Justin Timberlake. There's Heya by Outkast, and about three more hours of songs, some of which you will recognize. I mean, how can you not be happy when you hear Madonna sing La Isla Bonita? I mean, come on. So it's good stuff, and it works really well, and it's cheaper than therapy. Like, all this stuff is cheaper than therapy. Who needs therapy? So here's the other trick I want to show you. This is one of my favorites. In fact, this is what got my whole happiness engineering thing started. So embodied cognition means that there's a two-way street between the way your body works and the way your mind works. So the idea is that if you have a happy thought, then you can feel happy. But if you do the things that a happy thinking person does, suddenly you can also feel happy, which is kind of weird if you think about it. What do I mean by that? I mean, if you take this pen and you hold it like this, such that your lips aren't touching the pen, then what you're doing is you are subtracting, you're contracting this muscle, the zygomaticus major muscle. It kind of looks like I'm smiling, doesn't it? And your brain starts to think you're happy. So go ahead, I'll wait, go grab a pen. We're going to do this together. Grab a pen. If you don't have a pen, your finger will do, but it tends to hurt after a while. But I think a pen is better. Okay, so here we go. As you're kind of chomping down on the pen, if you chomp down on the finger, you might draw some blood, especially if you're hungry. So here we go. I'm going to set a timer for 1 minute. And what I want you to do is, before we go, I want you to give yourself a rating, a happiness rating on a scale of 1 to 10, where you are right now. So 10 being woohoo, already ecstatic. 1 being down the dumps, not good. So give yourself a rating and go. Holding your teeth such that your lips do not touch the pen and key it there. And if you're feeling silly, that means you're 90% of the way there. If you don't quite understand what I'm saying, it's because there's a pen in my mouth. So when there's no pen in my mouth, you can probably hear me better, but that defeats the purpose. Put the pen in there. Okay, there you go. And bring up these cheek muscles out as far as you can. There you go. And it's funny how you can sometimes go through an entire day and not exercise your face this much. When you exercise your voice, you try it out at your face. Exercise that face. Here we go. And 10 more seconds. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Woo! All right. And now give yourself a rating again on a scale of 1 to 10. 10 being woohoo, ecstatic. 1 being So did the rating go up or down? Up. All right. It went up. I have never heard somebody say the rating goes down. So yeah, that's how the body works. You do things like woohoo, power poses. Power poses work in a very similar way. And no matter what the psychologists say, power poses do work. You do feel better. You will deliver a better presentation if you hold a power pose for a couple of minutes before you do your presentation, just because it just puts your body in that victorious, expansive, powerful mood. Movement in general is a good thing. All right, question. Mimi says, I love what you are saying. Thank you, Mimi. Very kind of you. I love what you're saying too. And question for me, message of compassion is so helpful. Do you have any strategies for dealing with angry, irritable thoughts and feelings while isolated? I've been isolating even more because I'm trying to deal with those feelings. I'm so glad you asked. This is what we do here. All right. We are now going to learn how to deal with angry, isolated thoughts, or just generally mean, nasty, unhappy thoughts. So this is what I call challenging emotions, difficult emotions. So this one you may have to stand up, because we're going to do some funky cool exercises that You can do better when you're standing up. So I'm going to lead you through some very unusual instructions, Anita and everybody else, and I just invite you to play along and see how it goes. So the instructions are like this. So close your eyes and go ahead and feel that challenging emotion. And notice how I don't call it a negative emotion, because negative and positive are made-up titles, and there's nothing negative about it. It's just there. Emotions are survival signals. They're there to help you survive. And so we don't knock any emotion down. We just recognize it. But, you know, some of them don't feel as good as others. So we're just going to call it a challenging emotion. So where do you feel that challenging emotion in your body? Go ahead and localize it. And feel free to bring it up a little bit and actually feel it. Be with the challenging emotion. Okay, so I'm going to play along with you here. I'm going to find something that I really don't like. Oh, yeah, I got it. So when I was watching the Jackass in Chief at his press conference, dispensing medical advice, even though he's not a doctor. So that one, yes. So frustration, anger, yeah. So where are you feeling that emotion? So localize in your body. And then notice what the color of that emotion is, okay? Weird, but hey, when you ask people what the color is, they always have a color. So what is the color of that emotion? Great, so you got that color. What we're gonna do now is we're gonna gather that emotion all in one spot, right here. So wherever it is in your body, in your hands, in your feet, in your abdomen, you're gonna bring it up right here and focus that challenging emotion right here at your solar plexus area, okay? So you can do that with your breath. As you breathe in, gather it all up over here, and then as you breathe out, imagine you're pressing it like you're squeezing it into a ball. Here we go, five more times. Breathe in, bring in all that color, all those negative emotions. Sorry, did I say negative? Challenging emotions from all of your body. And then breathe it out, squeeze it in right here. Once again. Squeeze it in as you breathe it out, okay? One more time. Bring it up, squeeze it in as you breathe out. And this one last time, what you're gonna do is you're gonna breathe it in. And as you squeeze it out, I want you to squeeze it out of your body like a foot outside of your body. So squeeze it out into this little ball, like a lacrosse ball or a tennis ball. Bring it out right here, okay? And then watch it. Look at that ball. Look at that ball of challenging emotion. Notice how it's swirling around. It's got that color, okay? Good. And now what I want you to do is to step back. Imagine you have a tennis racket. Remember tennis, when people used to play tennis? Oh yeah, that thing. Okay, good. Pull it back and give it the hardest, most vigorous backhand you've ever given in your life. And go, and watch it. Watch that little colored ball go vanish on the horizon. Shake your hands out. And how do you feel now? Do you notice maybe your shoulders got a little bit lighter? Your whole body got a little bit lighter? Where did that emotion go? Interesting. So if you followed the instructions and you played along and you saw the color and you did that, guess what? Doing that is going to make a big difference in how you feel. And get, you know what? You can do that for another round. As I said, cheaper than therapy. If that took, what, 2 minutes? Do it again. Bring it up here. Bring it up, bring it up, bring it up. Pull it out. Leave it over there hovering and go boom. You can do it as many times as you want for as many negative emotions as you want. And it totally works. So there you go. So that diminishes the intensity of the emotion for sure. It also makes it more manageable. The other thing you can do is you can get curious about the emotion. So this is the metacognition strategy. We did a little bit of that earlier today. And today we're gonna get a little deeper into it. So the idea is, okay, you've got this emotion, it has a color, it has a shape inside your body. Okay, good. Now, can we get curious about this emotion? It's like, I wonder where this anger and frustration is coming from, where you have angry, irritable thoughts. There you go. Wow, angry, irritable thoughts. Where do they come from? What's it all about? Okay. And as you get curious about it, can you get amused about it? It's like, oh, wow, these angry, irritable thoughts mean this kind of came out of somewhere and nowhere. Maybe I watched TV. Do I really? That's funny where it came from, right? And the funny thing is, when you get curious about that negative emotion, what are you now feeling? Your brain can only really feel one emotion at a time. So when you get curious, now you're feeling that curiosity. And then when you start to get amused and you laugh at it, now you're feeling the mirth, you're feeling the laughter, because you can't hold on to this whole chain of emotions. And you can take this chain wherever you want to. You can laugh about it. You can feel silly about it. So I would do this whenever I had road rage in Los Angeles, which is basically every time you get on the road in Los Angeles. And remember, we are our worst selves when we're driving. So you're there and some random anonymous person, can't even see them, cuts you off and suddenly like, nah, you bastard, blah, 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 right? And then immediately I'd go, huh, isn't that funny? I mean, I don't even know this person, never going to see them again. It's not like I'm going to run out of road all of a sudden. That's hilarious. And now I turned this emotion that was challenging and bringing me down and potentially dangerous if I, you know, happen to have a shotgun rack in the back of my car, to something that's totally manageable and even fun and enjoyable. So this is emotional alchemy. This is how you turn base metal into gold. You turn difficult emotions into something that actually energizes you and lifts you up. And it also allows you to kind of step back and look at it and say, oh, wow, look, this thing got me angry and irritable. And if the source of that anger and irritation was a person, then guess what? You're able to discuss it with that person from a much more empowered, calm space that can lead to actual productive discourse. You can say, hey, you know, this thing you do tends to evoke some anger and irritability in me. I was wondering if we discussed that. And I was wondering where that comes from, right? So that's probably a better way of doing it. Fantastic. Okay, great. So the ball exercise works. Fantastic. Thank you for sharing, Elizabeth. Okay. So more questions for me. We're coming up to the 1 hour spot. So, if you don't have questions, that's fine. But if you have them, I am here to answer them. So what's going on? What's on your mind? What is not on your mind? What would you like to be on your mind? Are you sleeping well? How are people sleeping? I'm hearing people are having difficulty sleeping, which is totally understandable because people had difficulty sleeping before this was happening and now the shit hit the fan and you're probably having more difficulty sleeping. But this is also a great opportunity to tune up your sleep and make it better. Wow, super helpful, brought tears of relief. Fantastic. All right, these techniques work. So here's another thing. Look, so I got this happiness engineering course and the whole point is to bring these techniques to you and make them a part of your life and to design your life around happiness. So if this is something you're interested in and you'd like to pursue it further and actually really design happiness and bake it into your life such that when stuff like this happens, you're ready. But more important, when stuff like this is not happening, you are your best self. You are the most empowered version of you. You are the person who can be that source of light to lift everybody up. So the application is at happinessengineering.com/apply. And I'll put that here to everybody. Happiness. If you are called, then please do apply. And if it's a good fit for you, then we will start that with the first cohort in May of this year. Because look, happiness is the most altruistic thing you can do for the world. When you make yourself that shining, bright, thriving version of you that's able to give your gift to the world, which is the whole point of being on this earth anyway. That's how that kind of thing can reverberate through the network of humanity and touch everybody else and light everybody else up too. Remember, one candle can light up an infinite number of candles. So be that candle. Fantastic. Okay, good. Sleep is definitely a big one. I just moved to a new building that is much louder. Any advice for tuning it out? Well, the first step is to use earplugs. So get the best earplugs you can possibly get. So 35 to 40 decibels is the rating and get that. That will usually help, but not necessarily all the way. I remember going to Burning Man a few years ago and earplugs, hey, if it's making your jawbones rattle, earplugs ain't going to help. So it depends on the noise level and what's going on. But earplugs are potentially a remedy. You can put on top of that ear muffs. That may start to become less comfortable, but still, it's a solution. So I'm not quite sure what the issue is there. Athanasia. So let me know what is happening there. And I'm probably, how do you say, Athanasia? I'm going to go with Athanasia. So great. More questions here. Sleep. So the five pillars of human thriving. Robust relationships, meaningful work, sound sleep, mental fitness, physical fitness. Today we went over mostly the mental fitness part, and that really is the underpinning of a lot of the other things. At the same time, sleep, relationships, work, all these things are important. And after tomorrow's session, I will do more general happiness engineering talks that touch upon all five areas instead of just mental fitness, because I've done a lot of this mental fitness stuff. This is like the fifth one. Today's the fifth one, tomorrow's the sixth one. Okay, good. Great. So Lauren, let's see. Interviews are stressful. I'm a new software engineer in the job market. And engineering interviews are very stressful and technically challenging. This isolation has made me acutely aware that as a defense mechanism, my mind tells me that I'm not skillful enough to get a job. Any thoughts to combat these false self-defeating thoughts? Why, yes, I do have some advice to combat these false self-defeating thoughts. So first of all, go ahead and take advantage of the 10 free interview, 10 free sessions of the Super Charisma course, online public speaking course that I have. And that'll start to train you and just make you more present in your body and more comfortable with the idea of speaking in public and doing interviews. But the thing you want to remember is that there's two situations that you can have in an interview process. One is that they're interviewing you. So they are buying and you are selling. They're evaluating you to find out if you're good enough, and you're being evaluated and you're cool with that, right? The second situation is that you are buying and they are selling. And you've probably been in that situation too. Say if you're an attractive woman and you've had guys pursuing you. And in which situation do you have more power, Lauren, or anybody else who's watching? I think it's pretty obvious. You have more power when you are the buyer. So what I encourage you to do is to just assume the position of the buyer. You are evaluating them as much as they're evaluating you at the very least, but you're doing it even more because there's one of you and there's dozens of companies that could hire you. And you are a skilled woman in an area where there aren't a whole lot of skilled women. In fact, these people are clamoring for women engineers. So if that's who you are and that's what you do and you're good at what you do, which I'm guessing you are because you're getting the interviews, act like it. Go ahead and be the boss, be the one who's interviewing you. So do your homework and say, hey, I mean, it's not like you're being mean or you're being haughty or you're being arrogant, but you're saying, look, I'm a lady with options here. I mean, imagine if it's a date, right? You are a lady with options and these people are courting you. They are the suitors. So, you know, in the nicest possible way, asking, hey, why should I choose you guys? Why your company, not somebody else's? What makes this special? How are you? How do you, these are the things I'm looking for in a fulfilling job. How does this fit in with my model, right? So, and just assuming the stance of the buyer is enough to dispel all these feelings of anxiety because they all come from the feeling of being evaluated. Am I good enough? Look, there is no you. As far as the Buddhists are concerned, there is no you. There really isn't. If you keep on looking to find out which part of your body is you, it's not in the kidney, it's not in the liver, it's not in your feet, it's not in your fingers, it's none of that stuff, okay? So don't worry about you. Go and gather good information on them. And that flips your brain into evaluation mode, which makes it impossible for you to evaluate yourself and worry about that. Okay, try that and see what happens. Like that? Okay, good. Go, Lauren. You're going to knock him dead. It'll be awesome. All right. Great. Okay, we're coming up on 105. If you have more questions, I'm more than happy to answer them. And again, that is not just applicable to jobs. That is your whole life. That is your whole existence. Are you buying or are you selling? Are you at the mercy of the world or are you an agent? Are you somebody who makes stuff happen? Are you somebody who lets stuff happen to you? So I encourage you to be on the side of the buyer, the agent, the person who makes stuff happen. And now, as good a time as any, to be that agent of joy, that agent of change, that agent of uplift, the person who dares to get inside people's hearts and their minds and to give them the companionship, the support, and the love that they need. You get to choose the way you feel. That is the main message of all of these sessions. And the more you practice these techniques, the more dominion you have over your mind and your body and your emotions. All right, fantastic. So if that's all, if there are no more questions, I'm gonna close the session for today. Thank you so much for your attention. Thank you for playing, and thank you for being radiant points of light that can share this kind of information with other people and uplift the world around you, because now is the time when we need this stuff very urgently. So thank you all, and go forth and be the light.